And this is 88.9 FM KUCI, broadcasting from the University of California in Irvine and streaming live through the internet at KUCI.org. And this is Tani Tenuville today here with What Would Arwen Do? The show where we ask if a Middle Earth elf lived in Southern California in the 21st century, how might she be? What might her life look like? How would she be celebrating the arts, music, and community? And today we're going to be in recognition of Black History Month. We're going to be talking about the contribution of the Fayard, of the Nicholas Brothers, and Frankie Manning, and black dancers, and all kinds of good stuff with my guest, my special guest today, Peter Flahiff, a local swing DJ, dance historian, instructor, tap dancer extraordinaire, and incredible person that I am so excited to have on my show. So anyway, please stay tuned for What Would Arwen Do? I hope you're having a great weekend already. And just to let you know that the views and opinions expressed on this program do not necessarily represent those of KUCI, the UC Board of Regents, or the management of KUCI. So, golly gee whiz, a little bit of interesting things in the news today. I want to give a little elvish perspective on something that's been in the news that people are probably already a bit tired of hearing about, but it has to do with Dick Cheney accidentally shooting a fellow hunter. And some of you may remember that, I believe it was last spring, I did a little show about when dove hunting season opened. It's just amazing to me how, and this is just, you know, yes, it's my personal thing about, but I just don't quite get it about the idea of hunting and shooting small animals for sport. I actually absolutely love birds. I wake up every morning to the sound of birds singing outside my window. I live in Newport Beach, and especially this time of the year, the birds are all coming in from flying up. Coming in, going out for spring. And so they're every morning I hear different songbirds. And of course, I hear the click, click, clicking of the hummingbirds. And I absolutely love it. It is like one of my favorite things in the world that I get to wake up in the tops of trees in listening to birds singing me awake in the morning. And so I believe that they are my friends. And there's actually a story in J.R. Tolkien's The Silmarillion, which is the history of the Silmarils and the history of the elves, pretty much. It's all the backstory for the Lord of the Rings stories. And, of course, one of my favorite stories is the story of Beren and Lúthien, the couple who were the first wedded couple of elf and mortal. And Beren was a man. In fact, for a great deal of time, he was an outlaw. And he was in the wild for quite a while, and there were some very tragic things that happened with regards to the death of his father and how he come into possession of his father's ring, the Ring of Barahir. But I just want to read a short excerpt from the Silmarillion in the story of Beren and Lúthien. And it says, thereafter, for 4 years more, Beren wandered still upon Dorthonion, a solitary outlaw. But he became the friend of birds and beasts, and they aided him and did not betray him. And from that time forth, he ate no flesh, nor slew any living thing that was not in the service of Morgoth. He did not fear death, but only captivity. And being bold and desperate, he escaped both death and bonds. And the deeds of lonely daring that he achieved were noised abroad throughout Beleriand, and the tale of them came into Doriath. But I love where it says, and he became the friend of birds and beasts, and they aided him and did not betray him. And from that time forth, he ate no flesh, nor slew any living thing that was not in the service of Morgoth. And which is, I know it may sound a little odd, but that's partly the reason, too, that I am vegetarian. I just feel like if I can get my nourishment without having to think about anything, having to die for that, I'd rather do that. So anyway, just with regards to this story about Dick Cheney accidentally shooting his fellow hunter, Harry Whittington, I guess I asked the question, well, what would Arwen do? And I guess I think that what Arwen would do is probably give up. Well, I don't think she would ever take up bird shooting to begin with, but possibly give it up. I don't know. Just something to consider if even the possibility of shooting one of our fellow human beings is in the picture, why would we have to be so persistent in our desire to shoot little animals, little birds? So anyway, that's my little perspective on local happenings for the week. And with that, I want to transition over. I have onto a much more positive note. And actually, I think the positive note in this might all be that hopefully some people somewhere will be thinking about the fact of that in hunting, there is always the possibility of shooting something you don't want to shoot. And perhaps people will take up something like swing dancing instead of hunting or shooting little animals for sport. So speaking of swing dancing, I want to actually welcome a guest that I have in studio with me this morning. But first, before I give him a chance to object, because my darling friend is so modest, but I just have to read a little bit of background about my friend and guest this morning, Peter Flahiff. We're switching over here. Actually, you know what? I think I'm going to do, just to kind of get us here in the mood, I'm going to play. Oh, you know what I'm going to do? Because this is, okay, I'm all over the place. And so this morning we're going to be talking most specifically about the contribution of Fayard and Harold Nicholas to the world of dance. Also, Frankie Manning. And my guest today is Peter Flahiff. This is Black History Month, so I thought it would be kind of nice to have a show celebrating the contribution of a couple of great Black dancers to the dance community. I'm part of the swing community. It's one of my favorite things to do in life. You want to know how elves keep in shape? One of the ways we do it is through dancing, and swing dancing is just incredible. I love it. I love it. I'm just totally hooked. Anyway, my guest this morning is Peter Flahiff. Peter has taught and performed and DJed at swing dance camps and venues all over the country and around the world. He currently, if you would like to see him, he is currently at the Atomic Ballroom every Tuesday and Friday evening. And I can guarantee you I will be over there this evening with Peter. DJs over there, and he also gives private lessons, which I'm having a private lesson this afternoon. I'm so excited because in a few weeks coming up down in San Diego is something called the Balboa Rendezvous, which is Balboa dance. And I'll let Peter even talk a little bit about Balboa dance as a type of swing dancing that we'll be doing a whole weekend of classes and dances. And so I'm getting brushed up on my Balboa to get ready for that with a friend of mine, Donald. Hey, Donald, if you're listening, get ready for the Balboa weekend. So we're going to be doing private lessons, and Peter does private lessons over there. Another one of my favorite things to do in the world is swing dance classes and lessons. And that's Atomic Ballroom. Anyway, if you're interested in that, also you can get information about Atomic Ballroom at atomicballroom.com. And they have dances and lessons going all week long. It's just an incredible, fun place. Peter counts among his past instructors and teachers Frankie Manning, Ryan Francois, Marcus Amberbal, Audrey Wilson, and members of the top Swedish Lindy Hop performance team, the Rhythm Hotshots. He's also been fortunate to study tap dancing with many of the masters, including Robert Reed, Jim Taylor, Leonard Reed, Chaz Young, Walter Freeman, Tobias Tack, Hollywood musical choreographer Miriam Nelson, and Fayard Nicholas of the legendary Nicholas Brothers, and of course, former tap and Lindy Hop partner and author Rusty Frank. And I have to take a little detour right here to say that I just got to see Rusty dance the other night at her place, the Rhythm Club, and to the Jive Aces, and that was incredible. Anyway, I'll probably talk with Peter a bit about that too. Peter taught weekly classes with Rusty in the South Bay area of Los Angeles for 5 years. They brought joy and love of swing dance to hundreds and hundreds of students, of which I am one. They helped build a strong swing swing scene and some very successful dance venues in the area, including the finally remembered Point 75 in Hermosa Beach and the still going strong Rhythm Club. Peter, say hello.
Hello.
Yay, I'm so happy. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me on.
So, gosh, I want to talk about Fayard and Howard Nicholas, but can you tell me just a little bit about, because I was just at the Rhythm Club on Wednesday night, and the Jive Aces, a club, a group from England was there, which I think you've seen them in action before.
Oh, yeah. Friends with them.
Yeah. It was so cool. The Rhythm Club is so great. And Rusty made an announcement that night that she had broken all attendance records with the Jive Aces. 217 people were there.
Terrific.
And we had so much fun. The dance floor was packed, and it was great fun. And Rusty came out and did a tap dance for us.
Very good.
It was.
She's terrific.
Yes. I wish I could see you two together sometime.
We had a fun little act there for quite a while.
Yeah.
Who knows?
The wonderful thing, though, even though I think, gosh, it would be, is that, because you're here in Orange County doing what you do here at the Atomic Ballroom and some places, and then for our listeners and people who are up in the L.A. County that don't always, and some of us are just crazy enough that we actually drive all over the place to dance with all of you guys.
Dancers are loony. Yeah, absolutely.
But for some people, you know, that live up in that area that aren't quite ready to venture down here, she's up, and that's in Playa del Rey.
Yeah,
isn't it?
The Rhythm Club's in Playa del Rey, right next to LAX, and goes every Wednesday night.
Yeah, and you know what? Actually, I don't have her website address right here at my fingertips.
You can actually look her up at rustyfrank.com.
Oh, okay, yeah. And that's RustyFrank.
Yep.
Yeah. Peter, can you tell us a little bit about, because Fayard just passed away this in late January, but can you just tell us a little bit about these guys? They're so incredible. You've shown us clips over at Atomic Ballroom, which is one of my favorite things sometimes during our tap classes. And can you tell us just a little bit about these guys? I wish we could give people visuals.
But yeah, it's hard to know where to begin with the Nicholas brothers. They achieved so much, and they did so many incredible things for tap dance and just dance in general. Over an incredibly long career, because they started when they were extremely young. When Fayard was a teenager, I think 15 or 16 years old, and Harold was younger still, maybe 10 or 11, they began performing together. And right around that time, they made a couple of early movie shorts that they called Soundies, with a couple of bands from that era. They appeared in a couple of feature films, and they started working at the Cotton Club at that extremely tender age. You know, 16 or 17 years old for Fayard and 11 or 12 years old for Harold. And, you know, their life involved, you know, going to work, and work for them started at midnight. You know, the first shows at the Cotton Club started at midnight. The second show started at 2.
Yeah.
They didn't finish their work day until 4 or 5 in the morning. And then they would go home and sleep, and then they would get up in the morning, and they were tutored because their mother and father still felt very strongly about them, you know, continuing their education,
right,
still growing as men. But, you know, that was the lifestyle that they led, and they were just incredible. If you see clips of them when they were kids, it's hard to believe what you're seeing. Because
that's absolutely true.
Yeah, a lot of times you see clips of child dancers, and really what puts them over is the cute factor. Oh, it's such a cute little boy.
Yeah,
oh, such a cute little girl.
Factor.
Right. And not to take anything away from Shirley Temple, who is a great child tap dancer too, but a lot of kid tap dancers, it's just that they're cute. They're not necessarily talented. But the Nicholas brothers, as young as they were, could dance as well or better than most of the adult tap dancers that were their peers.
Now, when one night you shared a little story with us about even just kind of how it was, because they weren't like kids that their parents send off to dance teachers to teach them how to dance. How was it? It's an interesting story, kind of even how they kind of picked up dancing.
Absolutely, and
this is like, okay, just to give people a time frame. This is like in
1930s. Very early 30s, yeah.
Okay.
And it's a story that Fayard loved to tell, and he told it often, that his parents were both in the orchestra at the Standard Theater in Philadelphia. They were both musicians. And so they would take Fayard with them to work sometimes, and he would sit in the audience while they were playing in the orchestra pit, and he would watch all these different vaudeville acts on stage. And his favorite performers were the tap dancers because they always looked like they were having so much fun, and he felt like he wanted to have some of that fun for himself. So just by going and watching these great tap dancers, he taught himself. He would go home and try and duplicate the steps that he had seen that night, and he taught himself how to perform. And then he taught Harold. So he was sort of the kind of the driving force behind their talent.
Now, and he was the taller one.
He was the taller of the two, yeah.
And
which isn't saying much because he was still pretty short. But yeah, they were wee.
Right. There was something too. Oh gosh, where was that? Yeah, because he, okay, there was an article I got off the, this is actually off CNN.com, it was so cool, that says, was talking about Nicholas passing away, there was a quote here from the younger Nicholas. Okay. My dad put heaven on hold, and now they can begin the show, the younger Nicholas.
Oh, yeah, that's Tony.
And I just thought, like, oh, my goodness. And it says, they were still boys when they were featured at New York's Cotton Club in 1932. And though they were young, they were billed as showstoppers.
They absolutely were.
Yeah, and despite the racial hurdles facing black performers, they went on to Broadway, then Hollywood. Astaire once told the brothers that the acrobatic elegance and synchronicity of their jump and jive dance sequence in Stormy Weather made it the greatest movie musical number he had ever seen. Fred Astaire said that.
That's a pretty widely held belief. Whenever anybody sees that scene from Stormy Weather, it usually jumps to the top of everyone's list. It's unbelievable.
You've shown it. And you know what? This is another reason why people might want to come over to the Atomic Ballroom. For one thing, during the dances, you guys show old movies, sometimes old cartoons and stuff, up on a big screen, which is so funny, so fun, as such a fun backdrop even for the dancing.
Yeah.
But quite often we get to see some of these clips, like of the Nicholas brothers. It says here about that particular number. In the number, the brothers tap dance across music stands in an orchestra with the fearless exuberance of children stone hopping across a pond.
Yep.
In the finale, they leapfrog seamlessly down a sweeping staircase. And don't they actually do this? Don't they do like the splits all the way?
Yes, they're leapfrogging over each other and into the splits on the next stair. And then
all the way down the staircase. Yeah. It's an incredible.
It's 8 or 10 stairs. And it's, you can't believe what you're seeing when you're seeing it.
Yeah. And that was back when people just, that's what they did. There were no special effects.
That's absolutely right. Yeah. And there's a quote, and I'm paraphrasing, but someone had been talking to Gregory Hines about, well, we need to do a movie about the Nicholas brothers because they were so important. And Gregory said, you couldn't do it. You'd have to use CGI to do what they did for real.
Right. Yeah. I thought that was in here somewhere too. Yeah, that it would have to be computer generated. Yeah. There's just no way.
No one can do what they did.
Yeah. You know. And they were also, weren't they also kind of famous for, because they would not only do those splits, but they would come up from the splits.
With no hands. Yeah.
How did they do that?
The groin strength alone just humbles you. It's amazing. They weren't just talented dancers. They were athletes in the truest sense of the word. It's just unbelievable.
And like I said, you know, the synchronicity when you watch these and the incredible energy they had with each other.
Yeah.
I mean, it was, if you talk about like just two people that are so completely in tuned, in synced, it's just incredible to watch them together. Now that one that you showed us one time. Is that from Stormy Weather also? It's not the dance. It's not that, it's not like a big stage dance.
Was it in color?
No.
Okay.
Oh gosh. And it's the one where, and Howard had, what's it? Howard's the younger one, right?
Harold. Yeah.
Harold. Yeah. He had this little thing where he like makes these little cute noises.
Oh yeah. Things. Yeah. 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 That's from a clip called The Big Broadcast of 1936 that they were in. Yeah. And it was, they just had so much fun that you can actually, you can hear Harold making these little noises because he's having so much fun.
Like shrieks.
Little shouts and noises, and he kind of hollers to Fayard from times, and they're always just kind of bantering back and forth. And it's, yeah, absolutely remarkable.
Yeah. Now, you brought in a CD.
Yeah.
And we have a couple of things, a couple of clips on here that we can, I want to play just kind of as we go along. This first one here is, okay. I just have down that here that it's, the Nicholas Brothers.
Yeah.
But I'm going to play number 14.
Yeah, they made a couple of recordings when they were extremely young, when they were at the early part of their fame. You know, just recorded a couple of kind of throwaway fun songs about dancing, and they're very cute. But what's remarkable about them is that you get a chance to hear Harold's singing voice, which was a considerable thing. And then in each of these songs, there's some tap dancing that you hear, and that's Fayard. So they kind of, each of them takes something for themselves on these songs.
Okay, cool. Now, we don't have the jacket cover, so I can't say what the name of this is, but we're just going to jump right in here and listen to it.
All right.
If you're feeling low down, 'cause the skies are gray, just wrap your cares in rhythm and dance. Dance your cares away. Give old gloom the showdown, he'll be on his way. Just wrap your cares in rhythm and dance. Oh, dance your cares away. Now I'm here to teach you all how to make your life a song. Just you keep tapping on wood with your feet, and you can't go wrong. Next time you're in trouble, you'll come out okay. Just wrap your cares in rhythm and dance. I'm gonna give you one more chance. Just wrap your cares in rhythm and if old gloom the showdown, 'cause he'll be on his way. Wrap your cares in rhythm and dance. Now I'm here to teach you all how to make your life a song. Just you keep tapping on wood with your feet, and you can't go wrong.
This guy's in rhythm and know how he danced.
And that was Harold Nicholas singing and Fayard Nicholas dancing. And this is Tawny Tenuville here today on What Would Arvin Do at KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine and streaming live through the internet at KUCI.org. And today my special guest is Peter Flahiff, local dance historian, tap dancer, instructor, just all around cool guy in here talking with me today about the contribution of Fayard and Harold Nicholas to the world of dance, to which so many of us swing dancers are so, so grateful for their contribution. I want to read a little bit more from this article Fayard, born in 1914, and Harold, born in 1921, learned to dance while watching vaudeville, which you mentioned, Peter, shows while their parents played in the Pitt Orchestra. One day at the Standard Theater in Philadelphia, I looked on stage and I thought, they're having fun up there. I'd like to do something like that, Fayard recalled in a 1999 interview. We worked up an act called the Nicholas Kids and did it in the living room. Our father said, when you're dancing, don't look at your feet, look at the audience. You're not entertaining yourself, you're entertaining the audience.
Yeah, that's a point that Fayard was very keen on making throughout his life, especially with sort of the advent recently in the tap dance world of a particular style where the dancers will sometimes turn their back on the audience because they're focusing so much on the rhythms that they're trying to create and things like that. And it drove Fayard crazy. Mm-hmm. He appreciated, you know, the skill and the artistry that they were bringing to the dancing and the complexity of the rhythms, but he really felt that it was kind of rude a little bit and that you were really not engaging the audience who was there to be with you and to be entertained by you. And he really never quite understood that because it had been such a part of his aesthetic for his mm-hmm. entire life was to really to give back to the audience. Those are the people that were there to see you. So, you know, you owed it to them to give them your attention and your skill and your style and your smile.
What an incredible just artistic and work ethic, you know, I mean, with regards to just, for young kids, even
absolutely.
Just to have such a sense of, and it seems like that it was coming from, cause I think a lot of times for people who do live, kind of in contribution in the world, you know, of giving back, it's out of gratitude. And it seems like, you know, They just saw people having so much fun and saw an opportunity, you know, to give back through their talent.
Yeah,
and,
absolutely.
And boy, did they.
Yep, definitely.
Because, I mean, that was during the era when, you know, swing dancing and all of this stuff was just kind of coming around. And even though they were tap dancing, mm-hmm. a lot of what they do did, you know, translated into the regular dance scene. Isn't that right?
Yes and no. I mean, a lot of their energy and a lot of their movement, you know, dancers would look at and say, you know, I wonder if there's a way that I can kind of incorporate that into what I'm doing. But, there was definitely...
a period of time when
there was a lot of cross-pollination going on. Definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It says, too, that the brothers were good enough by 1928 to debut in vaudeville. In 1932, mm-hmm. they made their film debut in the short...
Pie Pie Blackbird.
Yeah. And were booked at the Cotton Club, which became their base. They were allowed to mingle with the white celebrity patrons before going home to bed at 5 or 6 a.m.
And that's actually a remarkable thing because, you know, of course, the policy at the Cotton Club was black entertainers, but only white clientele. There were no... black clientele that were allowed to come to the Cotton Club and enjoy the acts. It was the acts were black, and the patrons were white, and there was no mixing. Even the performers were not allowed to come out and greet the guests by any means, except for the Nicholas Brothers. And you know, it was just one of these things where, you know, maybe it was because they were kids or whatever. But everybody in the audience wanted to meet them, wanted them to come out from backstage and hang out. And so, you know, Fayard said, you know, we'd come out from backstage and they'd sit us down at the table and they'd buy us orange juice, you know, because they couldn't drink.
Right.
So they would have their little orange juice and they would sit around and they would talk to Mary Pickford, Charlie Chaplin, just every major celebrity that you can think of.
How
in the 20s and 30s.
Too.
Absolutely. They met everyone and everyone loved them.
Yes.
You know.
Yes. Well, it says, too, okay, they would sleep until 3 p.m. when their mm-hmm. daily tutoring began. Like you said, then return to the club by chauffeur-driven limousine for the first show at midnight. And at that time, Fayard was 18 and Harold was 11.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah.
movie mogul Samuel Goldwyn spotted them at the club and cast them in the Eddard Canty music Kid Millions.
Yep.
So are there it's a dance number that they do from
it's one of those really weird kind of goofy, you know, comedies from the 1930s, but you know, again, the Nicholas Brothers come out and just kind of tear it up, You know, and you and again, your jaw just drops when you see these kids.
Oh yeah,
but they're just remarkable.
It says their polished urbanity and classic good looks, which they were. I mean, these were handsome kids.
Absolutely.
And
they didn't dress like kids. Again, it's that whole thing.
They
didn't come out all cute. They came out in these really hard hitting suits. They looked sharp. They looked like little men.
Yes, and I mean, and just the way that they held themselves, you know, just. I don't know.
Style.
Yes. Absolute style. Yeah. It says their polished urbanity and classic good looks made them film stars despite the celluloid segregation that relegated them to non-speaking parts and dance sequences that could be easily cut for racially squeamish audiences in the South.
Yeah.
They finally danced with a white star, Gene Kelly, in their last film together, The Pirate, in 1948. And wasn't that kind of like one of the first times really that... I don't know if it was in here, but I read someplace else that was kind of like the first time on film.
It was one of the first integrated dance scenes for sure.
Yeah.
And it was, again, it was one of these real kind of mutual admiration things where Gene Kelly just thought the world of the Nicholas Brothers and they felt the same way about him. And Fair told a great story too about, you know, rehearsing for that number that, you know, Gene and Fayard were rehearsing hours and hours and hours and just pounding themselves trying to get this number brilliant. And Harold was just kind of sitting over in the corner, just chilling. And it was driving Gene Kelly crazy because he was a real perfectionist and he really believed in long, hard rehearsals. And finally, he just blew up and he turned to Harold and said, What are you doing? You're just sitting there. We need you to rehearse this number so that we can do this as a trio and have it really great. And Harold said, man, I got it. And Gene just kind of stared at him, and he looked over at Fayard, and Fayard said, yeah, he's probably got it. And Gene said, fine, prove it to me. Do the number. And Harold stood up, and he did the entire number cold, perfectly, and then sat back down, and Gene said, well, okay, you know.
You got it.
Yeah, yeah. You just proved that you didn't need to rehearse, so don't rehearse, whatever.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's incredible. Well, I do want to play another song here. Is this again going to be, is this again,
it's the same, I think it was the B-side of the same record. It's Harold singing and Fayard tap dancing. And this one is called They Say He Ought to Dance. It's got a really cute, kind of funny lyric. But for anyone who's at all familiar with Cab Calloway as a singer, and especially the young Cab Calloway, you can hear the influence that Cab had on Harold's vocals because they were performing at the same time at the Cotton Club. Cab's band was the house band at the Cotton Club. Uh-huh. And so the Nicholas Brothers performed in front of them a lot, and Harold just loved the way Cab sang, and he used to imitate Cab Calloway sometimes. And one night, Cab had heard about this and thought that it was really funny, so he brought Harold out on stage and said, you know, I have, you know, one of the Nicholas Brothers here is going to sing a little song for you like me. And Harold, I think, actually sang Minnie the Mooch or something like that. But what they did was, you know, they had the microphone that dropped down out of the ceiling and just kind of hung there.
Uh-huh.
But Harold couldn't reach it, so they brought a table up from the audience, and they picked Harold up and set him on the table, and Harold sang up into this microphone and just blew everyone away, just stopped the show again. So this is, you know, kind of listen for that Cab Calloway influence in this.
Yeah, okay, so this is, and that's... Is that this song?
Yeah.
Oh.
Well, no, this is a song called They Say He Ought to Dance, but okay. you can really hear the Cab influence.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Okay. And this is 88.9 FM KUCI in Irvine.
His mother made him practice every day. Tra-la-la-la-la-la-la. And though it made the neighbors move away, he went tra-la-la-la-la-la-la. His mother said he'd sing after he'd grown up. And so he watched the years drag. Time marches on, now I'll own up. His voice sounds like the tearing of a rag. He could be a great singer, but he hasn't a chance. Every vocal teacher he goes to tells him he ought to dance. He puts so much expression in the songs of romance. village vocal teacher he goes to tells him he ought to dance. His obbligato leaves them blotto, and although it sounds sweet, they just yell brutal, it's all futile. Your vocal talent has slipped to your feet. He has studied in Paris with the masters of France, but the masters had him deported. They said he ought to dance.
Broadcasting from the University of California in Irvine. And this is Tawny Tenuvielle today with a special edition of What Would Arwen Do for in recognition of Black History Month. My special in-guest, I got to stop saying that word. My in-guest, in-studio guest, Peter Flahiv today here with me talking about Fayard and Harold Nicholas. Great dance team and their contribution to the world of tap and dance and all things that we love. That last track that we heard, again, that was Harold Nicholas singing. Mm-hmm. And was that the Cotton Club?
No. I don't know where they would have recorded it, but it's probably a song that he would have performed there.
Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about maybe some of the people that they would have gotten to dance with. And
Well, that's part of what's truly something that can't be duplicated anymore. People will ask me sometimes, you know, wow, you know, are we ever going to have anyone of their caliber again? And sadly, I don't think it's possible for us to have dancers like the Nicholas Brothers again. Not that there aren't people who are technically capable of tap dancing as fast or as creatively as them. It's just a different environment. You know, when they were coming up, tap dance was a dance that was in demand and everyone loved it. You know, Leonard Reed, who was another great tap dancer and who actually worked with them and produced some shows at the Cotton Club and was a great tap dancer in his own right, said, you know, back in those days, they said, you know, you couldn't have a show without tap. It was just that much a part of the American entertainment scene. It was absolutely. And you watch old movies and they're just these random tap sequences that just come up.
Right.
It was just expected by the audiences. And so it was out there. It was the dance that people really wanted to learn and they enjoyed watching. So there was a lot of opportunity to do it. You add to that the fact that the Nicholas Brothers were performing every night at an extremely young age at the Cotton Club. So they have the opportunity to perform on stage with some of the other truly great tap dancers of their era. Bill Bojangles Robinson, the Berry Brothers, all these other great tap dancers were also acts there. So they got to see them and work with them. And then, of course, you have these incredible bands playing behind
right.
you. Duke Ellington and his orchestra, Cab Calloway and his orchestra, all the different bands that came through the Cotton Club. These are the bands that are backing you. And and people used to ask, of course, you know, you'd ask dancers like this, well, who are your favorite bands? And Fayard was always unhesitant in responding that Duke Ellington was without question his favorite band to dance in front of, because he said, with Duke Ellington playing behind you, you feel like you're floating. It's just effortless. And that was, you know, so this is what you have as your environment. And then, of course, you throw into the mix that they started when they were so young.
Right.
They started when they were, you know, teen or preteen.
And the vaudeville acts they
had. And the vaudeville acts, you know, that they had exposed. Yeah. And so there you have, and of course, they were performing two shows a night, six nights a week for years.
Right.
You don't have that opportunity to perform and practice on a nightly basis in front of paying customers anymore.
It just doesn't come up.
Yeah, with the best bands in the world playing live behind you. So as terrific as the tap dancers of today are, your Savion Glovers, your Jason Samuel Smiths, your Iadeli Cassells, people like that, and they are phenomenal dancers, and I've seen a lot of them live. It will just never be the same as it was for the Nicholas Brothers because they got to perform these things nightly, and there was the drive coming from the world. People wanted it, and in a way that we just don't these days. Tap isn't as highly regarded as it was then for whatever reason, and it makes me sad.
Yeah,
I have to say.
And even just their own personal motivations. I mean, they loved this. They loved it. They, you know, they were in an environment where they were doing what they loved. People loved what they were doing.
Right.
You know, there was the whole synergy of, you know, again, you know, like them dancing and then getting to mingle with people like, you know, these movie stars and stuff. So there was just a whole synergy that was going on during that time period that can never be duplicated.
Absolutely. You know? Things have become very compartmentalized as far as people's talents. You know, right around the 50s when the method acting sort of thing came into play and actors suddenly became, I'm just going to focus purely on acting. And not to say anything against that, because since that time, of course, we've had some truly brilliant acting performances come through because of that. But it has come at the cost of people being all around entertainers. And we forget how broadly talented people were back then, because they had to be. If you wanted to remain a working performer, you know, yes, you may be a dancer first and foremost, but you also needed to be able to sing a little bit. You needed to be able to tell a couple of jokes and probably act a little bit. James Cagney, who's known mostly for playing, you know, those hard-bitten gangster roles in those film noirs from the 1930s, people don't necessarily know what a phenomenal tap dancer he was as well. And there's a little bit of evidence on film of him as a tap dancer. You know, he did Yankee Doodle Dandy where he played George M. Cohan, and you see him dance a little bit in there, but he's playing Cohan in that movie. So he's not really dancing his own style.
Right.
You want to see Cagney tap dance the way he enjoyed dancing. There's a movie called Footlight Serenade where he dances quite a bit, and you get to see him really perform.
You show that at Atomic sometime?
I have it somewhere, so I'll see if I can dig it up and put it on screen. But, you know, Cagney was, there was a dance school in New York, and, you know, you could go and you'd pay a buck or two, and you could rent a little bit of floor space and just kind of practice. And they had teachers who would roam around, you know, towel around the neck and a pair of shoes on their feet. And if you needed help or coaching, you'd ask one of these guys for help. Cagney was one of those guys.
Wow.
He was a tap dance coach.
Do you think
coach.
He ever met the Nicholas Brothers?
I'm sure he did. Because like anybody else, if you were in New York and you had some time to kill, you would go to the Cotton Club. And if you went to the Cotton Club, you saw the Nicholas Brothers, and they stopped the show cold all the time.
And so their contribution just, you know, spans not only all these decades, continuous contribution, but I mean, it's an art form that, you know, one of those things that will never be able to be duplicated.
Absolutely.
And happily, we have some things on film and even like the CDs that we got to play today.
And that's what we need to do, is to just treasure what we've got left.
Yes. And take tap and swing and dance lessons.
Of course. Absolutely.
And I love that, too, because I really loved what you said about, I think today, this is one thing when I see, well, what would Arwen think? What would Arwen do? It's like, I think the elves were very well-rounded. You know, they liked to be out in nature.
So.
They liked to dance. They liked to sing. They cared about the environment, good food, good company. And I think that we have a tendency in our society, especially here in America, to get compartmentalized. You know, oh, it's like our only source of exercise is that we go to the gym.
Right.
Or our only source of, we only eat certain kinds of food. And even just with regards to our professions and, or we go get PhDs and become very specialized in an area instead of getting broadly educated.
Right.
And so, and it's great to be focused, and there's good things that can come out of that. And yet, it's like you said, I think sometimes it's good to be intentional about broadening the things. That's why, much as I absolutely love swing dance, I love taking tap dance lessons. I love the Balboa, which, is a type of swing.
Right.
I took a couple of Argentine tango classes.
Which is
classes.
A beautiful dance.
Oh,
yeah.
Absolutely love it. Yeah. And then there's blues dancing.
Of course.
But I think, even it all... I feel like even in doing those other dancers also makes me a better swing dancer.
Sure.
Because I'm still learning how to interact with people. I'm still learning how my body moves through space and all of that.
And everything relates. It really does.
And tap dancing, it's so funny because I think, because you teach tap over at Atomic Ballroom. Uh-huh. And again, we are almost out of time here, but I do want to let people know that they can get information about that at atomicballroom.com. What's the phone number there, too?
It's 714-423-2866.
2866. Yeah. And you do lessons over there?
I'm there 5 days a week.
Five
I'm not there Wednesdays and Thursdays, but every other day of the week I'm there. I'm either teaching the group classes,
which
I'll be teaching tonight.
Starting at 6:15.
Uh-huh. Or I'm available for private lessons and stuff, too.
Yes, which I love. Yeah. Those are the good places to practice, to get your technique down and really get tightened up on stuff. Well, I want to thank you, Peter, so much.
It's been my pleasure.
For coming on the show today. And I hope that some people will just take some time to stop and appreciate the sacrifice of especially people in the Black community. It's been a long, hard road for them.
Yeah.
Just not only within society, but within the areas of art and film and dance.
But it's great to be able to celebrate, the contributions and the beautiful things that they've brought, the music and the dance.
Absolutely. And we can still enjoy them today.
Absolutely.
And benefit from them. And so with that, I think, what's this last, this is a compilation. We're going to play another one off of this, this CD.
Yeah. The CD is called Cotton Club Stars. And again, it's just a really obscure compilation. But this track is a recording of a medley of songs performed by Duke Ellington's orchestra, and it's actually introduced by the man who was the MC at the Cotton Club, a guy named Herman Stark. And so he kind of introduces the band with exactly the same... it's the intro that he used for the band at the Cotton Club. So this is as close as you can get to actually being at the Cotton Club. And it's kind of a long medley. I don't know if we'll be able to get to all of it, but we'll certainly be able to hear part of it and part of the energy and the drive that Duke's band had there. And just remember, this is the band that the Nicholas Brothers got to have behind them every night.
Wonderful. Well, thank you again so much. This is Tani Tenuvial, and we'll be wrapping up today's What Would Arwen Do? Coming up next is Firehouse Rock with King Pablo. So I hope you'll stay tuned for that for the best reggae music around. But we're going to end up here with a little compilation. And this is, 88.9 FM KUCI. And I hope that some of you are going to get out swing dancing. If you are looking for a fun evening, please come over and come dancing with Peter tonight and me and a bunch of really fun and friendly people over at Atomic Ballroom here in Irvine. That's right off of Main and MacArthur. And you can get information about that online, atomicballroom.com. And there's group lessons before the dance and then a great dance all night long. Again, they have old movie projections up on and an incredible dance floor, just a lot of fun. So anyway, I hope you're all having a great weekend. And Alinsala Lumen Omentielvo, a star shines on the hour of our meeting. Thank you, Peter.
My pleasure.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to our famous Cotton Club. Great to see so many friends here tonight enjoying themselves in spite of the cover charge. And if you can spare a minute from your merrymaking, I'd like to have the pleasure of introducing the greatest living master of jungle music, the rip-roaring harmony hound, none other than Duke Ellington. Take your bow, Dukey. First number tonight's going to play a brand new little tune entitled The Cotton Club Stomp. Let her go. ¶¶
Thank you.